This is a special report from ABC Radio News. This has been a day of great debate in Washington over American policy in Vietnam. This special program will present the highlights of that debate. The debating teams have been made up of professors and some government officials, one side arguing that President Johnson is right in his conduct of the Vietnam War, the other that we shouldn't be fighting a shooting war in Vietnam. McGeorge Bundy, one of the president's top advisors on Vietnam policy, was to have been the star debater defending the administration, but Mr. Bundy didn't show up. The great debate, or teach-in, as the sponsoring professors called it, went on anyway. It was carried by special radio hookup to more than 100 college campuses across the country. In Washington, some 3,000 professors and students listened to the debating teams in a hotel ballroom. The moderator, Professor Ernest Nagel of Columbia University, began the main session by reading Mr. Bundy's statement.
I have a very important announcement to read. I've been requested to read to you a text of a statement by Mr. McGeorge Bundy. I greatly regret that it is impossible for me to take part in the discussion this afternoon of our policy in Vietnam. I have looked forward to this meeting, and I hate to miss it. When I accepted your invitation, I did so with a warning that I might be unable to attend because of other duties. It gives me no pleasure that this warning has come true. I regret my absence the more because I wholly disagree with those who have argued that it is inappropriate for a government official to take part in a discussion of this kind. It may be true, although I have no first-hand knowledge, that some of your meetings on Vietnam have failed to meet the standards appropriate to university and college discussion. It may also be true, and I have thought so once or twice myself, that a few of those who feel strongly about the situation in Vietnam have been more interested in pressure upon the administration than in fair discussion with its representatives. But the preliminary arrangements for this particular meeting, so far as I have knowledge of them, have been fair to a fault. I'm confident the discussion this afternoon will be a model of its kind. Members of the academic community and members of the administration share a deep interest in the encouragement of such fair and open discussion. It has been argued that debate of this kind should be avoided because it can give encouragement to the adversaries of our country. There is some ground for this argument, since it is true that communists have little understanding of the meaning of debate in a free society. The Chinese will continue to pretend, and perhaps in part to believe, that American policy is weaker because 700 faculty members have made a protest against our policy in Vietnam. The American people, whatever their opinions, know better. They know that those who are protesting are only a minority, indeed a small minority, of American teachers and students. They know also that even within that minority, the great majority accept and respect the right and duty of the American administration to meet its constitutional responsibilities for the conduct of our foreign affairs. The American people know that the real day of danger will come when we are afraid of any unpopular minority or unwilling to reply to its voices. They understand what communists cannot understand at all, that open discussion between our citizens and their government is the central nervous system of our free society. We cannot let the propaganda of totalitarians divert us from our necessary arguments with one another, any more than we should let them be misled by such debates if we can help it. I will not take your time in this brief message for a rehearsal of the policy of this administration on Vietnam. Let me take only a word to speak of our purpose here, our purpose there. That purpose is peace for the people of Vietnam, the people of Southeast Asia, and the people of the United States. We evidently differ on the choice of ways and means to peace in what we all must recognize to be a complex, ugly, and demanding situation. Those differences may go deep to the nature of the politics of Asia, to the legitimacy of force in the face of armed attack, and to the true prospects and purposes of the people of Vietnam themselves. But my own assessment is that what divides us is less than what unites us. None of us wants the war to be enlarged. All of us want a decent settlement. None of us wants other men to be forced under a totalitarian political authority. All of us seek a solution in which American troops can be honorably withdrawn. None of us, I hope, believes that these are easy goals. All of us, I trust, are prepared to be steadfast in the pursuit of our purposes. I recognize the entire sincerity of the great majority of those who now disagree with our policy in Vietnam. I think many of these critics have been wrong in early moments of stress and danger, and I think many of them misunderstand the hard realities of this dangerous world. But their good faith and good intent are not in question, and on other issues at other times, their efforts have been of great service to the country. Having said this much, perhaps I can ask in return that these critics should recognize that the administration which now bears responsibility for the conduct of our foreign affairs does not admire force for its own sake or brinkmanship of any sort. The purpose of its foreign policy, in Vietnam as elsewhere, is that diplomacy and power and progress and hope shall be held together in the service of the freedom of us all. So I trust that the discussion this afternoon will not turn upon charge and countercharge against the motives of those with whom we disagree. Let it turn instead upon analysis of the situation as it is and of choices for the future which can serve the purposes we share. I repeat my apologies for my enforced absence, and I take comfort in the thought that I shall miss the meeting more than you will miss me.
That was the statement sent to the teach-in by McGeorge Bundy, who didn't show up himself. There were a few boos and hisses mixed with the applause as the moderator finished reading the Bundy statement. Then Professor Nagel began the formal proceedings.
This meeting has come into being because of widespread doubts in many academic communities as well as elsewhere concerning the wisdom of current United States policy in Vietnam. It needs to be emphasized, however, that the meeting has been sponsored by university teachers throughout the country and organized by the Inter-University Committee for a Public Hearing on Vietnam on the basis of two assumptions. The first is that whether or not those doubts are well-founded, there has been insufficient responsible debate in public of the grave issues raised by our actions in Southeast Asia. The second assumption is that since a thorough airing of these issues by competent students is a condition for an enlightened public opinion on them, in a liberal democracy such as ours, in which governmental policies require the assent of its citizens, students who possess knowledge pertinent to those issues have a special duty to discuss them openly and critically. In short, the primary aim of this meeting, an aim that surely merits the strong endorsement of all who are committed to the ideals of liberal democracy, is to contribute to public enlightenment through responsible discussion of a serious problem confronting all of us.
The panel of five professors arguing that the United States is wrong in Vietnam was headed by Professor George Cahen of Cornell University, who began the debate.
Professor Nagel, ladies and gentlemen, I am indeed very sorry to learn that Mr. Bundy finds it impossible to be with us this afternoon. I see no reason, therefore, for altering in any significant way the remarks I'd planned to make. I will perhaps have a few additional things to say in closing concerning his absence. Since the end of the last war, American officials have made such grave errors in policy towards Southeast Asia that we have every right to be skeptical about their ability to respond intelligently to the present situation in Vietnam. Their most consistent failure has been an inability both to appreciate the importance of Asian nationalism and to work with rather than against this powerful force. This is a major reason why Burma, Cambodia, Indonesia have become so distrustful of the United States, and why they have either broken or come close to breaking their relations with us. Moreover, the obsession of American policymakers with what they still see as monolithic communism has blinded them to the fact that communism in Asia has adapted itself to nationalism. And they have confused the broad but nationally differentiated force and potential of communism with the threat of specifically Chinese power. Despite the immense information gathering facilities of the government, serious policy mistakes have been made because decisions have been taken on the basis of inappropriate criteria, wrong analyses, and a disregard for the relevant facts. At the same time, essential information has been withheld from the American public, and crucial policy decisions concerning Southeast Asia have been made before the public has even been aware that a problem exists. And once taken, these decisions have set in motion events which severely circumscribe any moderating influence which an informed public opinion might bring to bear. Moreover, in recent months, the tendency has increased to dismiss even thoughtful criticism of government policy as irresponsible meddling. In Vietnam, American policy has been wrong from the outset. When the American public faces the prospect of war, it has the right to full and honest answers. I had indeed hoped that Mr. Bundy's appearance would be an indication of a change in the administration's attitude as to the value of informed public discussion. I can only hope that his indispensability in meeting some major crisis of policymaking is really of greater importance than the contribution he might have made this afternoon towards our better understanding of the administration's aims and to that kind of enlightened public discussion which is so essential to the wisest conduct of foreign policy.
Professor Robert Scalapino of the University of California filled in for McGeorge Bundy as the chief defender of American policy in Vietnam.
Mr. Moderator, ladies and gentlemen of the panel, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, both here and unseen. First, it should be perfectly clear that I am not here as a spokesman for the government. I do not know what Mr. Bundy would have said. As the moderator has made clear, we knew about this on both sides of this panel only about 12:30, and consequently, My remarks will be strictly those of myself, as prepared rather hastily after that time. I think we can all agree that in the Vietnam crisis, we face one of the most complex and grave crises for America since World War II. There are no easy answers. Probably there are very few people in this audience who agree precisely upon every detail of the crisis or the probable answers. And I'm quite certain there are no two people on this panel who agree precisely. We have, and we are now exercising, our right to engage in free and untrampled discussion. And along with that right, of course, we have a responsibility, which I think my predecessor fulfilled nobly, namely to try to pitch the level of the debate as high as possible, to avoid excess emotionalism, and to try to get at the basic issues, complex though they may be. Now, it seems to me that in beginning, I would not start my remarks with an historical background, as did Professor Cahan. I would rather prefer to work those in to some of the critical questions to which I would like to address myself. The first of these questions, which is, I think, critical, is as follows. Is the Viet Cong a truly indigenous force in South Vietnam? And has it achieved its strength or its support, such as it is, through promoting socioeconomic reform? To me, the answer to this question, while complicated, is on balance, no. Let me cite, to begin, an editorial from the Peking Daily Worker of April 15th of this year, and reproduced in the Peking Review on April 23rd. Said Peking, "The Vietnamese people's anti-U.S. struggle for national salvation is a just revolutionary struggle against aggression. It is certain to win because there is the wise leadership of the Marxist-Leninist Workers' Party of Vietnam. Because there is the unity of the 30 million Vietnamese people, and because there is sympathy and support from people the world over." I call to your attention the first phrase in that statement, "because there is the wise leadership of the Marxist-Leninist Workers' Party of Vietnam." I think that there is little question that the Viet Cong is a carbon copy of the Viet Minh, which preceded it. This is certainly not to say that it does not have indigenous support and leadership, in nominal terms at least. Clearly, most of the leaders of the National Liberation Front originated from the South, as that front is now structured. And whatever the bewildering differences in figures, I am prepared to say that a significant segment of the National Liberation Front is still Southern in origin. But what are the truly critical factors? These factors, it seems to me, are as follows. First, who does know the leadership of the National Liberation Front? Individuals like Nguyen Ho Tho. How many, either in or out of Vietnam, really subscribe to their leadership? The real leaders of the Viet Cong are, and have always been, those in small, hardcore elements that are also members of the Communist Party. And that party has Hanoi as its headquarters now, as in the past. The South Vietnamese Revolutionary Party numbers no more than 500 or so. It could not possibly be expected to dominate the 500,000-man party of the North. Not only is the leadership of this movement shadowy indeed, but take a look at its basic principles. I urge you to read them carefully, because I suggest that though there may have been differences in tactics between the South National Liberation Front and the North Workers' Party, or Lao Dung Group, there have been no differences up to date on the question of basic policies or of fundamental programs. This is not an unusual movement. The Viet Minh also had innumerable non-communist elements. The Viet Minh also, until it came to power, claimed to be a multi-class, multi-front organization dedicated to national liberation of Vietnam. But it ended up, as you well know, under the domination of the Communist Party, and opponents were either liquidated, silenced, or reformed.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how much time. Another member of the panel of professors supporting American policy in Vietnam was Professor Michael Lindsay of American University.
The other point, which I think people haven't made, which I think the United States has failed to put across, is that I think it should be very clearly said to the Chinese leadership, if you are genuinely interested in the welfare of the Chinese people, then we have nothing to quarrel about. Our quarrel arises entirely from the fact that you are determined to impose your system on other people, whether they like it or not. And in terms of the American democratic belief that governments owe their just part of the defense to the support of the governed, we, by our own principles, must oppose you.
That was Professor Michael Lindsay of American University.
Professor Taylor.
Replying to Professor Lindsay now is Professor George Cahan of Cornell University, the chief spokesman for the panel criticizing administration policy.
Right order to Professor Morgenthau on this one.
May I just make one comment or two? I quite agree
and
with
now,
Professor
joining
Lindsay
Professor Cahan, Professor Mary Wright of Yale University, another of the critics.
A Leninist attack, as much as we should have, is that we on this side are very profoundly disturbed about what we regard as a faulty position of trying to create counterinsurgency where local conditions did not make it feasible. We are concerned about those paramilitary forces in South Vietnam. The situation in Malaya was very different, you will concede. Point two, as to how we are going to decide whether the Chinese communist leadership is acceptable to the Chinese people. I would argue that that government, for all of its authoritarian, totalitarian control, has a phenomenal record of success, and one has to presume, I think, a fair degree of support on grounds of its accomplishments, and I certainly question whether an outside power can presume with any safety to vote against it on behalf of the Chinese people. You know, it's very much what they say about their friendship for the American people under our government.
These have been the highlights of today's great debate in Washington, the so-called teach-in between opposing teams of professors. Throughout the day, they have debated the issue of whether the United States is right or wrong in fighting a war in Vietnam.